I just love getting unfiltered and unfettered. And now, here's Tony and Fran.
And welcome to episode 50 of Unfiltered and Unfettered, the podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. It is June the 11th, 2014, and we are coming to you from the Mile's Studio 1B. I am your appropriately humble co-host, Tony the Bully Opinionist, with my craft-making co-host, the Pope of the podcast, Sir Francis One. Kiss the ring, Fran. Good evening.
Good evening, Tony. Appropriately humble, you know, you've been using that for a long time. I'm not sure that's accurate.
You need me to change that up?
We might have to feed that into the old truth-o-meter.
I feel humble.
Do you?
You know, one of our friends that I'm a Facebook friend with put a lovely Facebook post the other day. I think it was Mike Mulhuizen said, I'm a humble narcissist.
Yeah, he posts some good stuff.
Yeah, he does. So shout out to him. Francis, episode 50. You know, the Super Bowl,
yes,
is going to do Super Bowl 50 in regular
numerals. Right.
And I think it's in honor of our 50th podcast.
I believe that's when they made the decision. Yes. And they're going next year. They're going right back to Roman numerals.
Right back to Roman numerals.
So, yeah, I would have to say, you know, that one thing caused the other.
So, you know, and maybe the Browns will be there. But and that would be Johnny Football, baby.
Johnny, no, I told you the Padres drafted him, bro. He's going to play baseball. He's going to play baseball. He worked out for them.
That's a publicity stunt on the Padres. That had nothing to do with Johnny Football. Francis, boy, there's just a lot of shit going on right now,
dude. I don't know that I've ever communicated with you as much in between podcasts as I did last night.
There's some surprises.
Yeah. If you're political geeks and nerds like us, last night was
big.
That was big.
And we are going to talk about it.
Yes, we will.
So let's go ahead and get started with that.
Okay, boys, let's get started. Give me both barrels and shotgun that news.
And in a subject we'll be picking up much more later, Bratt defeats Cantor.
Down goes Cantor. And he went down by a lot. This guy, Bratt, is an economics professor at a university in Virginia. This is the primary now, not the general election for that congressional seat.
Right.
So this was a Republican versus Republican, Tea Partier in Bratt versus the establishment in Cantor.
Versus the number two House Republican,
yes, the
Eric
majority
Cantor.
Leader in the House. Of course, he really actually is number one. The speaker technically works for both parties.
Yes.
Although he just happens to be a Republican right now. So Cantor really is the number one guy in the House, the number one congressman in the House, because the speaker is not required to actually be a congressman. But so that's a big hit. That's a big hit for somebody. I mean, his polling data was so bizarre. I mean, people came out and said, well, our internals showed that we were up 34 points. He lost by 11 once the final count was in. 11 points for a sitting majority leader. That's never happened.
Well, and it goes against something we've talked about many times on this podcast. Money wins elections.
Right. Right, because he spent millions and lost to a guy who spent nothing.
And Cantor spent like $166,000. That was it.
Bratt did, yeah. Bratt.
I'm sorry, Bratt, yeah.
Cantor spent millions. In the plural, yeah. And we'll talk about this. But the Tea Party, to call them the Tea Party, is a little nefarious because they kind of left him hanging, and we'll get to it. But
we'll talk about that.
He kind of pulled up his own bootstraps and went at it alone for quite a while. But that's just huge. Like when that first trickled out, a couple guys I follow on Twitter said Cantor's in a little bit of a fight. I thought, no way, because they were talking about how much of a margin does he need to win to show his street cred,
right?
And then all of a sudden, I was like, he's not going to win. And then I saw one tweet that said, the Cantor office has turned off the projections from the news feeds in their office. That means one thing. They know they're going to lose, and they don't want to see it up on TV. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. We'll get into more of this later. All right, next. All right, and the peaceful Taliban have now successfully attacked the airport in Karachi, Pakistan, twice. For the second time in 2 days, Pakistan's largest and busiest airport shut down after militants from the Taliban launched an attack. Security forces told CNN that an unknown number of gunmen attacked the academy's entrance and were met with armed response. I don't know if you've seen any of it on YouTube. Man, they did some serious damage.
No, I'm not watching any of the clips, no.
Yeah, they had some RPGs, rocket-propelled grenades. They messed some stuff up,
to
put
it simply.
What is
their potential beef with the Karachi airport?
What's their potential beef with anybody? I don't know. You know, it's the Pakistanis. I mean, they... Right. You know, I mean, I know that they're peaceful Muslims and everything, but damn it. After we just released five peaceful Talibani members.
Yeah.
Talibani, I'm sorry, members.
Well, but those were Afghani Taliban.
Afghani,
right?
Taliban, which, you know, is a distinctive difference from the Pakistani Talibani. Because I think they celebrate Christmas on a different day or something like that.
Their science is better. That was a South Park episode.
You know, it's not getting much coverage. I think it's kind of significant. If you saw any of the footage from the initial attack, it was big.
Yeah.
It was explosive. So, yeah. Ties into the Bergdahl thing. Maybe we'll get into that later. All right, next. So, the Los Angeles Clippers were up for sale, and here's the quote from Donald Sterling. I have decided that I must fight to protect my rights. While my position may not be popular, I believe that my rights to privacy and the preservation of my rights to due process should not be trampled. I love the team and have dedicated 33 years of my life to the organization. I intend to fight to keep the team. That's a quote from Donald Sterling over the Clippers deal.
I mean, at this point, is he any different than any other CEO who gets bought out when someone else gets the controlling interest in the, you know what I mean? Like, he's trying to draw on some sentiment that, well, this is my team, I love them.
Well, he's not going to get any, but he's got legal, he can make a legal fight of this.
Well, he's going to make a fight, he's not going to win, but he's going to tie things up till he dies, because he's not that young.
He can tie things up for a long time.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, really, literally, this could go on for 10 years. He probably won't live to see the end of it.
Right.
But what it's going to do is jam the NBA, because they're going to have to fight this.
I just want to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just you know, but he's acting as if some of his rights are being infringed. And talk to any CEO who loses majority stock control of their company, and then they're put out by the board of directors when it was their company that they started from the ground up. It happens. That's how business works.
Right.
It's not, you know, his rights aren't being infringed. It's just, here's the other thing. If he goes into court, it's going to be worth its weight in comedy gold if this guy gets on the
stand.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because, you know, who knows what he's going to say.
Yeah. He hasn't put congruent sentences together for a long time. But, hey, you go, Donald. You go, baby. All right, next. All right, here we go. The and this is over the Bo Bergdahl situation. Right. Now the White House, they're basically throwing Chuck Hagel under the bus. That's the way I read it, Fran. How do you read it?
Well, he testified today. I mean, well, I read it that way
I haven't got to see it all. But
I read it that way only because that's really kind of their MO, right? I mean, that's, they say, because what realistically is the president saying when he says, well, I heard about it on TV like you? I mean, right. We've been in management enough to know what he's saying is, well, the head of that department didn't brief me.
Right.
I had to watch it on CNN. So he's clearly, you know, so in this case, I mean, I have no doubt that Hagel was involved in it. Obviously, he was involved.
Oh, obviously. He had to be.
So they're just all kind of with a long left arm pushing him in front of Congress to testify today. And during his testimony today, I kind of got the feeling that he felt like he was being pushed out by himself, because he kept making the statement, President Obama made the final decision. Every time someone pressed him, he would say, the president made the final decision.
But,
so
yeah.
I think he feels like he's being hung out there.
Well, House Armed Services Committee, Buck McEwen, I'm sorry, Republican California, he came out and he said, they, meaning the White House, indicated it was Secretary Hagel who made the final call.
Right, and he cleared that up today pretty quick. Like, he said, no, that was the president.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, the president, the Secretary of Defense can't make that. He doesn't have the constitutional authority.
The president has to make that call.
Right, right. What I find interesting about this whole thing is that no one has gotten to the to the issue, the part about trading the five guys, no one seems to be touching that now. And I wonder if that's because they realize that the law that Bush signed saying that at the end of the war, all these prisoners must be released anyway. Well, that war officially ends in December of this year.
Right.
Meaning all they did was trade five guys back 6 months earlier than they were going to have to get rid of them anyway. And they got to do back for him. So, no one seems to be touching that. Yeah. And Hagel didn't mention it. And I thought because I thought that would have been an easy defense for this whole thing, because they really pressed him on, why aren't you bringing him back? Why is he stuck in Germany? And Hagel's saying, hey, are you a doctor? Because our psychiatrist is saying he's so screwed up, he can't talk to anybody right now. So we're not doing anything until they tell us he's okay to talk, and we'll go to Germany or bring him here one way or the other. And they started, invoking, who was that girl that got rescued in the early days of Desert Storm?
Young girl from West Virginia or somewhere.
Well, she came back 2 weeks after they... But this guy was gone for 5 years. No matter the circumstances of why he was gone for 5 years. So that's what Hagel's trying to press upon him. I think the guy's a little bit of a doddering fool, but he did well today, I thought. Mainly because I feel like he was trying to defend himself in both directions. Because you just got the feeling from the way he was talking, he's like, I'm not letting those bastards in the White House push me out here by myself. He clearly was dragging the president along. The president made the final decision. He just kept saying that.
Well, he's probably seen Susan Rice take Spears to the heart twice now.
Yes.
They pushed her out,
by the way.
They pushed her out in the beginning of this scandal.
Yep.
And then apparently realized, well, this is not getting us nowhere because nobody believes her over the Benghazi thing.
You brought that point up. Why would you do that? It wasn't her. That Benghazi thing is not her. She had nothing to do with Benghazi.
Right.
They made her the mouthpiece, and now they made it her fault. And so, you and other people say, well, who could trust her now after the lies she told us? She didn't tell us her lies. She told us the White House's lies.
Right.
So
right.
So why would you put her out there? I agree.
That's my point. Yeah. It's like, okay, regardless of what you think about Susan Rice, if the administration is pushing her at us, I'm not going to take her word for it because she already told your lies once.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. She just proved to be a mouthpiece. The difference here with Hagel is he was clearly involved in what was going on.
Sure.
She wasn't involved in nothing other than she happened to be the sorry bastard in the room when they decided who's going out.
Obama made the call. He went out there with the parents, and now he's going, hey, Chuck.
Yeah, right. Got to take one for the squad, Chuck. Chuck's not taking one for the squad. Go back and look at his testimony.
Well, maybe.
He is not taking one for the squad.
I didn't get to see a lot of it today.
I think you're right, because he clearly, his language, his body language, everything indicated that he felt like he was being shoved out the door by the White House.
Yeah, well, that's what it seems like. All right, next. All right, and a story that most of us should kind of be familiar with now. Hillary Rodham Clinton has released a new book.
Yep.
She's given a couple interviews in it. One of the things that she said that she's being taken to task is that when her and her beloved Bill left the White House, they not only were dead broke, they were in debt.
Right.
She's being taken a little bit to task, and today she got taken to task by Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I think like you had said before we went on, this is really a throwaway thing, but it was just kind of funny because you'd expect like Fox News or someone to be the first one on this bandwagon, but it was Rahm Emanuel who was, part of the Clinton White House when Big Bill was president.
Well, and let's be clear, friend, not to interrupt you, but let's talk about who Rahm Emanuel is. Because in my political storybook, if politics was the godfather, if the Clinton administration, if the Obama administration is the godfather, Rahm Emanuel's Sonny Corleone.
Right, that's right.
All right.
Right. Oh, right. Absolutely is, yeah. Yeah, he's the loose cannon and the whole deal.
As a matter of fact, I think that's why he left.
Right, we've talked about this before, I think that's what hurt the White House, when he left.
When he left,
But so he says to her, dead broke, and he says this to her, he's tweeted it out, which is where I saw it, but he basically calls her out, come on, dead broke, really?
Yeah, YouTube, where they're having an interview in Chicago, of course he's the mayor of Chicago,
right?
And he says, Hillary, dead broke, really?
Yeah.
She goes, well, I misspoke.
She said, it was an inartful way.
What she said, right.
Yeah. But he kind of did her a favor. Because he's...
Oh, yeah.
And I think he was doing that on purpose. This guy, people say what they want, Chicago politics is. This dude is a smart dude. This was the one guy Obama needed to have around him that he let get away. He's doing this on purpose. He defused an issue because this book is going to come at her all the way up to 2016, right? They're going to use this as fodder.
So Rahm Emanuel would have been this administration's Karl Rove.
Yeah.
It would have been this administration's James Carville.
Right.
I will tell you this, and I've read a lot of political books. One of the best one I've ever read, which I think I've mentioned on the podcast before, was George Stephanopoulos, just because I thought it was an insider view of what it's like to be that guy.
Right.
Right. The guy behind the scenes doing a whole lot of the legwork. I'll read Rahm Emanuel's book if he ever comes out.
Right.
I think he's a thug, but I think he's really smart. Well, he's a hell of a politician.
And I'll be interested to see what he has to say about his 2 years as the chief of staff of the White
Me,
House.
Yeah, especially.
Because it's not going to be, you know, it's going to be unvarnished. I mean, it's going to be, you know, because Obama will be out of the White House by then. There'll be nothing that's going to hurt anybody. So I expect that to be fully
I've had enough of this, and I'm going to go be the mayor of Chicago.
Right.
You guys
are
screwing me.
Right.
And you're gonna crash and burn.
Yeah, him and Axelrod did not get along.
And you know what? As a staunch conservative, I think this administration may have been much better if he would have stayed.
I absolutely believe that. Absolutely. That was a big mistake by Obama to let him get away instead of jettisoning Axelrod, who's like Reed. He can't like peace and prosperity. He has to throw a grenade out there to stir the shit again.
Right.
You know, and clearly those two guys didn't get along. And there have been enough stories about that. So,
all right. Rahm Emanuel calling out the Hill Dog next. All right, Francis. And just to open this piece up, I hear that Tin Cup McAvoy is the favorite to win.
You know what?
The U.S. Open. What?
From now on, when there's a golf thing, you just turn off your mic. You don't get to talk
anymore.
I love
Tin Cup. That was a great golf movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad you bring that up, actually, because there's a tie in here. But anyway, the U.S. Open starts tomorrow. Our United States Golf's national championship is tomorrow. I'm a Masters guy myself as the bigger tournament, but people like this one because it's kind of like the everyman tournament because anyone can get in it. And that's the only realism in Tin Cup, by the way. As long as you have a handicap that's par or better, that's registered with the USGA, the Golf Association of America, you can go to a regional site and attempt to get into the U.S. Open field. If you be one of the top 30 guys, you know, in finishing those tournaments. Tony Romo almost got in. He came within one round of getting into the U.S. Open last year, which might have been better for him because his football career is not that great. But this is another major championship going by without Tiger Woods. You know, he's getting older. The leg's still not healed. The neck's not healing. His chase of Jack Nicklaus may come to a halt if he can't get back on the course. Every major goes by is one less chance, and he only has four a year. So that's kind of – and surprisingly, I've watched, as I'm sure you're not surprised, all the interviews, the press conferences that they have, and they do all the living U.S. Open winners first. Every one of them got the question, is this tournament different because Tiger Woods is not here? Now, if you were a golfer and you were a past champion, if you were last year's champion, Justin Rose from England, and the first question you get is this tournament not as good because Tiger Woods is not here? What's your response to that question?
It wouldn't be very good.
I mean, wouldn't you get tired of that eventually? Like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, I don't – anyway. I mean, I'm a big Tiger fan, and I'm like, all right, guys, come on. I mean, what – we know it's not – these guys all know, the smart ones, pay the homage to Tiger Woods because they know – they make $1 million+ for coming in third because of Tiger Woods. He's up the money in golf, and they make money because of that. But again, just a big golf weekend, U.S. Open, on Father's Day for a reason. So it's a good golf weekend for those who like golf.
I watched Tin Cup. Thank God we're just not going to get into the World Cup. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, not yet. We will.
All right. Let's hope not. All right, and let's get into our next bit.
Let's get hardcore.
All right, so here we go, Fran. The Tea Party. Is it dead or is it alive?
Well, I mean, reports were saying it was dead. We talked about that. I mentioned that a couple of podcasts ago because they took a big hit in April. There was a lot of primary elections in April. A lot of states held their primary elections for the House and Senate. And no Tea Party members won. They were all defeated on every other than the guy in Nebraska. So the stories were, the Tea Party's dead. Last night, a quote-unquote Tea Party candidate, we'll get to that in a second, took out Eric Cantor, who's the majority leader of the Republican Party in the primary for the congressional, the 7th congressional district in Virginia. That, I mean, there are people right now who are still, who still can't believe, like professional political operatives who still can't believe that happened. Like, they're not believing the results. And I mean, it was that big of a, I mean, it was so big. I mean, I even texted you like, hey, dude, are you watching this?
Right.
Because this is like.
Which I was online reading about it at the time that you texted me. Yeah.
I'm like, holy cow. This is, I mean, I couldn't believe it. This is some college professor, economics guy, I think, from Macon University, I think.
At a small
university in Virginia,
economics
yeah.
professor, yeah.
Yeah.
He actually missed some of the political fundraisers because he said he had finals.
Right. And no money. The Tea Party did not support him. None of the three major Tea Party movements in the country supported him.
That's true. The only thing that they are talking about is some of the, you know, Laura Ingraham and Ann Coulter.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, he got some support from some...
Right.
You know,
national
radio
names, yeah.
Radio pundits
right.
that said this is the guy.
But no money into his campaign against a guy who was spending millions. I mean, in the final 4 weeks, Cantor spent like $3 or $4 million.
Yeah, against the guy that was the default winner, pretty much, is what we're saying.
Right. Has won by, I mean, he ran unopposed. I think 2012 he had a primary challenger in which he defeated by 50-some percentage points. And in the first year that he won... He was the primary challenger, so he ran, you know, obviously he was running opposed. All those years in between, he ran unopposed. So, you know, the question was, how much is he going to win by? How much does he need to win by to finally vanquish the Tea Party from the right wing of the Republican Party? And then all of a sudden, I start seeing tweets from guys I follow, some liberal commentary and some other guys saying, it's not looking good at Cantor at HQ. And then the one that really, I was like, okay, he's had it. When they turned off the TVs and they don't want to see it. That's when you thought, oh my God, this is really happening. And now I got, you know, I got five screens going on my computer at once and I got the news on, I got Fox, and you could tell they couldn't believe it. Like they were struggling. I was watching I guess Megyn Kelly's show at that point. They were struggling to spin this in such a way as to denigrate Democrats over this. And Brett Baer, he started it off. Well, they're going to say it was this and that, and it was this. This is how Democrats are going to frame this. And I'm like, you know what, Brett? I think you're one of the greatest newsmen on TV. That's a load of crap what you just got done saying. That man just got his head handed to him by 11 percentage points by a dude who didn't spend any money in the final month of his campaign. You got bigger problems than the Democrats crossing over. That's what Bill O'Reilly said. It's, you know, Virginia's an open primary, meaning you can vote in either one.
Open primary meaning that Democrats could go in and vote for the bad guy just to get him
right.
If
you're a Democrat, you can vote in a Republican primary. It's open to anyone who wants to vote.
Right.
But if you can only pick one. You got to vote for the Democrat or the Republican. And so what they're saying is, and what's common, it happens here in Tennessee a little bit because we're open as well, that they went in and voted for this guy, Brat. The problem is, Cantor lost counties that are so conservative, there's no way that would have
been. The margin was too big.
Too big, right.
The margin was too big.
11 points in a congressional race.
Yeah.
That's hard to comprehend, especially when his polling numbers was telling him he was 34 points ahead and he lost by 11. That's a 45-point swing. I mean, that's just, that doesn't happen.
Right.
And it never has happened. You got to go back to 1898 before they even called it majority leader for the last sitting senior member of a party to lose. The question is, it was the Tea Party dead? Did they come back to life with this? Were they never dead to begin with? Is this just another battle in the Civil War going on in the Republican Party, which I think now we can say is in full swing, right? I mean, wouldn't you say?
I don't know. I think the mistake that the Republicans are making at this point, not that the Republicans, but the pundits are making at this point, is to try to explain what happened.
Right, right.
And to try to explain what happened in terms of predicting the future. I think you need to wait. I mean, to me, but you know, television pundits don't get paid to say, all right, wait a minute.
Right. They got it right.
They get paid to say, here's what happened.
They got to get ratings, right?
All right. We got a runoff in Mississippi coming up. All right. We've got some key races coming up. And I think, is this a shift or is it an anomaly? I think it's too early to tell.
Yeah, I agree. Because you got a big race in Kentucky.
And I mean, fortunately, we're not a part of that system that has to say one way or the other. And I mean, just from my, you know, couch sitting political observation, I'm saying, let's just hold up here and figure out what this means. This could, we don't even know if it's good or bad yet. People are trying to figure out whether it's good or bad, depending on what side of the fence they're on.
Because we don't know this guy. No one knows this guy.
Nobody knows him.
Right.
I've heard, you know, I've already heard the rhino term being, well, we got rid of a rhino. Yeah, that's what's going on. Well,
right.
You know,
well, because he involved himself in immigration reform, right.
You know, it's about immigration reform. You know, people just need to take a breath and go, okay, this is one election in one district, which, by the way, Virginia politics is, we're going to talk about this a little bit later, too. There's some major gaffes going on in Virginia politics.
They're old time and they are cutthroat. Well, I think you said it before. All politics is local.
Yeah.
And that's how these people operate. They operate as if there is no national news or TV on them. You know, they just do things the way they did things in the 1800s. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But, the Republican Congressional Committee that raises money for House races for the Republican candidates who are running, you know, they're lukewarm on their support of this guy, Brad.
Right.
They better, I'll tell you what, you know, we could talk about trends or anomalies or whatever, but they better do one thing. They better pull up their boots and get behind this dude, because he could easily lose this election.
Well, they better start that. You're exactly correct there. But, you know, and I think we alluded to this earlier, because they're claiming this is a Tea Party victory. But, you know, even Brat's straddling that fence.
Right.
He's not. Well, because he's not saying I'm a Tea Party guy.
Right. Right.
He's kind of saying I'm a conservative Republican.
Right.
I have ties. But he's not throwing his lot in with the Tea Party.
Wait till he utters the C word. Wait till he says compromise, and they will label him a rhino so fast.
Yeah, they will.
But he, you know, look, this is no slam dunk just because he's in Kanner's district. He's running against his colleague.
Yeah.
Another professor, an economics professor from the same college, is the Democratic nominee. That's what makes this even more bizarre. The Democrats didn't even really have a guy. They didn't spend any money. They didn't do anything. And Kanner was just walking through this like, well, I've got this in a bag. The question is the margin. And he gets whacked. Now he got two professors from the same school going head-to-head in the general election. And it's a toss-up. And if I was a Republican, that would worry me. Because not only have you just lost one of your more level-headed leaders, you may lose his seat. And that's a bigger issue.
Yeah, that's a much bigger issue. But they're not. They don't look at it that way.
No.
That's the problem,
right,
Francis.
Right.
You know, the Republicans are losing... You know, in a complete reversal of direction of this conversation, the Republicans are missing a great opportunity here to say, you know what, as the Republican Party, we include the Tea Party. We are diverse. We will include offshoots and branches and whatever, even though the offshoot really is just a bunch of white guys.
It's a different group of white guys.
But you know, again, it's about marketing.
Right.
And at the end of the day, you better win the Senate.
I gotta believe there's a political operative out there, a smart operative who's yelling at people to say, you need to stand up and declare victory right now. You need to say, look, this is the democratic process. There are no sacred cows in the Republican Party.
That's what I'm
saying. If you're not doing the job, then you go bye-bye. And that's how it goes. Any person who declares themselves a Republican has a chance to get it. To get elected.
We will support the guy who works for the people.
Right. That's right. That's,
and
I mean,
that's what I'm saying. They're missing that opportunity.
No, I agree with you. This is like the greatest common man victory that you're going to find in a party that's really filled with bigwig Wall Street guys.
Right.
Hey, that guy from nowhere who spent no money just took out the top Republican in the House.
And he's our guy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
He's our guy.
Hey, look, people, this is a tin cup moment. Anyone can run and win.
Ooh, drop the tin cup reference.
Anyone can
run.
It's like the U.S. Open. It's wide open, baby. As long as you meet the qualifications, you can run and you can win. That's what I need to be saying.
Right.
Everybody has a chance at this, to influence government, to be a decider, to get in there and make decisions and help your fellow man by representing them. Because this guy just did it.
And if you want to fight, do it behind closed doors, but come out and with a unified persona, and they don't get that.
Right. They need that NFL locker room mentality, right? I mean, that's what they don't have. And,
and
I think you're right about the Senate. McConnell needs to wake up, because we talked about this earlier. I don't believe these things will be related. But if he were to lose, and he's in a dogfight with this Democratic challenger, this girl you labeled as one of your top 10 good-looking Democratic politicians.
Right, Alison Lundergan Grimes.
Yeah, Grimes. She's giving him all he can handle. And if he loses this race, you know, Boehner, and I'll say this right now, and you can write it down, Boehner will not be Speaker of the House come January 31st. He's going to lose that speakership. You can't lose your number one guy in the House and not pay
politically,
the penalty for that.
If she wins, it will be a different world.
Right.
Yeah.
Because Boehner will already be gone. Cantor is gone. And now you've lost your leader in the Senate in the Republican Party. That's the top three leaders of your party.
Right.
You know, but again, I would think...
That's like Luke Skywalker coming up and cutting off Palpatine's head. That's exactly
right,
what
right,
that will
that's
be.
Right, right. And they're all... I agree with you. I don't think this is some kind of... right now, I don't believe it's some kind of shift. I just... You know, McConnell's got his own individual issues in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And the people of Kentucky don't like bullshit. And that's what he's given them. And mm-hmm. so, you know... And Boehner has his own problems. He's got his own problems in his district. You know, he's got his own problems in Ohio. He says some things about his own caucus. Then those things are not related to what just happened to Cantor.
Right.
So you know, Republicans are in for a big change. Whether or not it's a fundamental shift in their politics, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think you're right. We got to wait and see how this plays out. But there's three big guys who, one's gone, and two are probably still sweating right now.
Yeah, and again, they need to put their arms around it and present a unified front. All right, let's go.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yo, yo, yo.
Oh, no, you didn't.
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 No, 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 no.
No, 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 no,
no,
no,
no,
no,
no,
no,
no,
no,
no,
no,
no,
no,
no,
no, no, no, no,
no,
tonight's episode of Oh No You Didn't. I'm going to start off, Francis, with Seattle anesthesiologist Dr. Arthur Silberstein, 48, allegedly exchanged nearly 250 explicit texts while working. And working means performing anesthesiology during
they're sleeping. What's he supposed to do?
The doctor allegedly committed additional unprofessional conduct by arranging sexual encounters with a female patient,
nice.
Sending her color selfies depicting his genitalia, and prescribing unauthorized narcotics to several patients.
Well, the only thing I would say is, I mean, you showed me his picture.
Arthur, oh no you didn't.
How else is Arthur supposed to get
well,
busy?
If you look at Arthur's picture, if Arthur could find somebody to exchange 250 explicit text while working, it's hard to blame him.
Right. That's what right. I'm saying. I'm with you. Go, Arthur, go. The only thing I have a question with, you show me that picture, that's got to be his high school photo. There ain't no way that guy's 48. The picture, if that's what he looks like at 48, my gosh, maybe he's taking some of his own gas. He looks like he's 20 in the picture.
You know, I don't know.
He looks
I don't
young,
know.
But hey.
I just goofered it. I goofered it.
You goofered it,
I Googled it because he looks goofy. And I'm thinking, Arthur, you know, maybe they're not actually getting a true picture. Maybe he's tweeting them, you know, pictures of George Clooney's junk. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what I would do, yeah.
Arthur, oh, no, you didn't. What do you got for us tonight, Fred?
Oh, this is one of my favorite stories. Look, I'm all for helping out. You know, I'm in the social safety net. I'm liberal.
You're a charitable guy.
I am, and I mean, I have no problem with people helping people out. I have no problem with tax dollars going to help people out. But look, we know there are just hobos out there, homeless, so-called homeless people, who are making $70,000, $80,000, $100,000
yes,
a year.
You've
busted a guy in Kentucky.
You've blogged about.
I wrote about three guys that I encountered. It was all a load of crap. Now, there are real people out there struggling, and there are people like a friend of mine from the church I go to who help and get these people work and they find jobs and all that. Having said all that, the people in this very rich, I want to say it's East End of London apartment complex, have become my new heroes. So it's this very rich apartment complex, series of apartment complexes. And I guess they all got together, pooled their money, as if they had to do that, and installed what they refer to as anti-hobo spikes. if you go to a lot of outdoor type museums, you'll see some of these things around, some of the monuments to keep the pigeons away.
Yeah.
They're metal, they're basically metal cones.
Yeah.
Into the concrete. They're not really, I mean, it wouldn't stab you, but you certainly aren't going to lay down on them. Well, these people said, that's a good idea. Let's put that in the alcove of the entrance to our buildings and on the sidewalk for 2 or 3 feet in either direction, which apparently the apartment building owns, so therefore makes it legal. And they put spikes. They put anti-pigeon cones, and they're calling them anti-hobo spikes around the... I mean...
Nice.
Look, plenty of people here have thought about that, but they're like, oh, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. They did it. People in London, they got the stones, and they had the euros to do it, and they put in anti-hobo spikes.
Hobos find another frickin' place to sleep.
Yeah, move along, hobos. Move along.
Are you kidding me?
Are you fucking kidding me?
Fran, as you well know, I am not a Catholic.
That's right.
Although we do have the solar pope.
We do have the solar pope. That might save you.
I have put him in the window.
Yes.
And he actually does it is amazing.
He does not deny anyone his blessings, Tony.
I laid there and stared at it for 20 minutes.
Yeah, he'll hypnotize you. He'll sit there too long, that's right.
Save me, Pope. The current Archdiocese of St. Louis says he was unsure if a priest having sex with a child was a crime back when he was the auxiliary bishop in the Twin Cities of Minnesota. Francis, tell me what an archbishop is.
Well, so there's a hierarchy in the Catholic Church. And
yes.
Some people may correct me.
Hierarchy and everything.
Well, right. But there's an actual rank order, right, that doesn't exist in a lot of the Protestant churches.
Archbishop's kind of up
near
there.
Near the top, right? Yeah. There. Well, it would be what you'd think. It's not the bishop, but he's like his, I'd call him a second-hand man. That's probably not totally accurate. Chris would be a better person to say exactly.
St. Louis, pretty big town.
But he's, this guy is big. Everyone would know this person. You know, the archbishop would be famous is a bad word, but he wouldn't be known. He'd probably be on a lot of radio programs in that town. He'd probably be on TV a lot.
Probably not the archbishop of, like, Johnson City.
No, like the archbishop of Canterbury. You have heard of him.
Yeah. I mean, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, heard of the title.
Right. Well, this is it. I mean, these are big wigs. You know, he would command respect of political leaders. This is a big position. Like, you don't get there by being an idiot.
Well, those were comments he made in a deposition taken in May, but released Monday as part of a lawsuit against him.
Yeah. I think we talked about that. My feeling is...
Carlson is not a party to the lawsuit.
Well, clearly he's lying. I don't think there's anything... I don't think you have to be, Matlock to figure out he's lying. I just think this is all groundwork for insanity defense. That's what I think. The coward's way out is what I believe he's going to.
But then what does that say if the guy's achieved a position like the archbishop, right?
Well, it says he's a liar and a scum. I mean, Catholic Church is big. I mean, the odds are you're going to have some bad apples. It doesn't,
You got to be kidding me. You said you don't know having sex with a kid.
No, he's lying. I mean, he's lying. Come on. I don't know who. Clearly, he doesn't have a lawyer. What lawyer would let him go out there and say that? That's who I'd have the. Are you kidding me? Really, dude? You're going to let your client go out there and say he didn't know it was a crime? Come on. I'm not buying that. I mean, at all.
He was under oath, Francis.
Yeah, because that stops liars from lying. Under oath, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's my version of tonight's Are You Kidding Me? The Archdiocese of St. Louis doesn't know that having sex with children is a crime.
The Archbishop. The Archdiocese is an actual entity.
I'm sorry, the Archbishop.
Yeah.
No intent to disrespect
we'll
the Catholic.
We'll have to have a segment, Know Your Catholicism.
No intent to disrespect the Catholic Church. There. That's my Are You Kidding Me, Francis. What do you got?
Well, let's move on to a different group of upstanding Americans and full of ethics and values. And that would be the Virginia Democrats.
Must be politicians.
Yeah. The Virginia Democrats, to be exact. So this individual, state senator from Virginia, was holding the basically holding the line against keeping the Republicans in the state from getting a majority. Mm-hmm. So the Republicans went old-timey. They went Abe Lincoln on them and said, hey, if you retire, we'll give you a job, nice job, and we'll give your daughter a job. So he looked at the landscape and he thought, man, there's a good chance someone else is going to lose an election here and I'm going to not be in the majority anymore. So yeah, why not? I'll take that job. So he retires, or he announces his retirement. But of course, that plan doesn't stay secret. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what he thought, that anyone would just not question the fact that he's stepping down. The majority now attained by the Republicans because of his retirement allows them now to block Medicaid expansion in Virginia.
Right.
There's some crafty devils in Thomas Jefferson's home state. But really, dude, I mean, we all make fun about lawyers and politicians and now Catholic priests. You know, the level of their integrity and their ethics and their values. But you're just coming out and saying, you might as well wear a clapboard and say, politicians are for sale. Believe it. Every one of us is for sale. We all have a price.
Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic governor, was trying to push through the Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. He had a very thin margin. And, of course, Senator Philip
A margin P, of one.
Yeah. Philip P. Puckett announced his resignation on Monday. And, you know, Francis, I don't think that you're recognizing his honorable service.
Oh, I'm sure I'm
because
not.
Because the Republicans said, although Senator Puckett has decided to win his tenure in the Senate of Virginia, his legacy will endure.
Back that up again. Republicans said that.
That is truly crossing the aisle.
I mean, when a Republican compliments a Democrat, you know something ain't right. You know it's not right.
And his commitment and service to the people have honored him with their votes in five successive elections.
Yeah.
And thanks for taking the money.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Holy cow.
That is beautiful.
I mean, do we, you know, like, we need any more evidence that it's just one gigantic corrupt cesspool, isn't it? I mean, for God's sake.
Virginia's great because, and you know what I think of Terry McAuliffe. He is just one bitter prick.
This is how bad it is, right?
Yeah.
He was the most underhanded criminal politician in Virginia.
Yeah.
He no longer is that now.
Yeah.
This guy's openly taking a bribe.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would Rob Blagojevich say about this? He's in prison for that very thing in Chicago.
Close.
Close to almost action. The only difference here was no phone call, and this guy got a head of hair.
Well, so, this guy took a legitimate offer and resigned his seat.
He took what's referred to as a patronage job.
Yes.
Legitimate.
That's different
is another
from
discussion.
What Blagojevich did, selling Senate seats.
Blagojevich just said, look, let's cut out this crap about a time card and Social Security. Just give me the money.
Blagojevich said, let's cut all out on this legal bullshit.
Give me the money.
Just give me the money.
That's all that happened here. All they're doing is laundering the money through an employer. I mean,
this is beautiful.
My people are in jail because of this, too. It's, you know, it's called collusion, dude. It's called laundering. Racketeering. That's all this is.
Yeah.
And hey, you know what?
McAuliffe.
God bless him. Now, the guy's starting to, Puck or whatever his name is, Puckett, he's starting to hedge a little bit.
Philip P. Puckett.
Yeah, he's taking some heat, so he's
Triple
starting
P.
to. He's starting to kind of tap dance a little bit on the coals, so we'll see what happens.
The job pays well.
They didn't give him a job as a head guy at McDonald's.
Yeah. No, they did not. They gave him, it was a pretty good, you know.
So if I'm a Republican.
It was, what the gay community would call a sweet package, I believe.
Look, man, if I'm a Republican in the district of one of these Republican state senators,
yes,
why aren't you giving me that job?
Well,
and here's why. Because they don't care if you don't have a job. You don't have anything to offer me. So I can't give you. I'm not concerned about whether my constituents have jobs. I'm concerned what can I get for the job I have to offer somebody.
Right.
So it's all, look, all this business about conservative values, it's all claptrap, dude.
Because McAuliffe appointed a GOP operative to the Virginia Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, and Republicans blocked the appointment, saying that they, basically, he'd sold the endorsement. He was just trying to give him, he was trying to do the same thing.
He gave him a patronage job.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
looking for favorable rulings. That's all that was about.
That's just beautiful.
It's a cesspool, dude.
Virginia politics is just...
You almost have to run for president to get to a point where you're not in the cesspool. I mean, it's... You know what I mean?
It's just a bigger cesspool, yeah. I think. All right, are you kidding me? And now let's go to our swan song.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
A serious sign of the apocalypse tonight, Fran. There's a mysterious disease that normally, that has happened sometimes, but it happens in very small locales, that is turning Oregon sea sharks from Oregon from Oregon all the way up to the coast of Alaska. It's turning them to goo. It's turning sea stars to goo, Francis. This is serious here, and you're just mocking me.
I almost spit out my water.
It's some bacterial infection.
And they're just dissolving.
They just dissolve into this little puddle of goo.
That can't be good, like environmentally.
No, that can't. If you're a sea star, it really can't be good. So I don't know. You know, frequently on Signs of the Apocalypse, we talk about ancient bacteria, uncovered, things unfreezing in Siberia.
Yeah, the sperm. The shrimp
now
sperm.
We got the spread of sea stars turning to goo. That can't be good for the ecology.
No, it can't. No. You know, because it sometimes it's the smallest being that could just throw everything. Like, you know, entomologists have said forever, if bees disappear, humans disappear like in months later.
Yes.
So, you know, who knows what the sea stars disappear, what's going to happen? I mean,
or what's turning them into goo. If the sea stars disappear, then those organisms turn their attention to something else.
Right. Something that will make bigger
what's
goo.
What's your sign of the apocalypse? I believe it comes from the sea
it's
as well.
Maritime as well. Yes, it is. Apparently, there's something in the ocean that is eating great white sharks.
This is not good.
No. The ocean apparently is under attack. I don't know. I don't know what you call them, not oceanographer. This woman had tagged a bunch of great white sharks. She had tagged this, I want to say it was a 20-foot female. And like 2 months later, the tag washed up on the beach. But these tags record data. They're almost like the black box of an airplane.
Yeah.
And it indicated that the shark changed rapid body temperature and was drugged rapidly over 2,000 feet, meaning it was eaten. Something grabbed it. Its body temperature merged, and that's what the tag picked up, the increased body temperature of another being. And then it showed it traveled a 2,000 feet in a very short period of time. Shorter time than the shark is able to propel itself. So now think about that for a second. So you have a 20-foot great white shark. Who knows how much that weighs? There's got to be a ton at least, right? I mean,
Yeah.
Another thing grabbed it, and the two of them went faster than the original shark could propel itself normally. That's
frightening.
Freaky. I mean, that's freaky. And,
that is.
And apparently, now they've found that there are several that have been eaten. They believe their best guess is that it is an offshoot of a prehistoric shark that measured close to 60 to 80 feet in length that must be in the out there eating these other sharks.
It's Megatron.
Megatron. Yeah,
Fran,
Megatron.
I'm getting my, this weekend, I'm getting my scuba diving certification. I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
Oh, you might. You might get to the bottom faster than you want. If the sea star thing don't get you, this thing that's eating great, you'll be like a pig in a blanket to this thing.
Yes, I will be.
Taking
not,
down
not
a great
even
white
that
shark?
Big. Yeah.
I mean, devoured it. Like they estimated that. The size of this shark would have had to been so big to eat the entire spinal, whatever they called it, of this great white that was killed. I mean, I just can't even imagine what could it be that's eating great. And it wasn't just one. Like I said, it's been several.
Something really
now.
Big.
Something big, and something's angry and hungry. So, and what happens when he eats all the great white sharks? Then what?
It's Godzilla.
Probably.
Godzilla!
Get me a Jaeger and go out there.
All right. Well, those are two frightening signs of the politics, signs of the apocalypse or politics.
Yeah, it's been frightening all the way around. We've got land sharks in Virginia.
Sea stars turning to goo and things are eating huge great white sharks. That's just stay out of the water. Go right. to the pool.
Yeah, have fun on your scuba trip, bro.
I will, but I'm going to stay in shallow water.
Yeah. Don't wear anything shiny, dude. Yeah. So, like, cover up because, you know.
Fran?
You're shiny white. Don't.
We're getting ready to conclude our 50th episode.
How did this happen?
I don't know. Thank you. Thank you for that fake applause track.
Lovely studio audience.
It's, but you know, anything that you've done 50 times, you've got to get back. And I will tell you, Fran, I actually went back a couple days ago and I started listening to our very first episode.
Oh, gosh.
I didn't get very far.
No, that's pretty bad, I bet.
Wasn't that bad, but you know, you know, we had a different intro girl. We had, yes.
Is that the one that got incarcerated?
We've went through some changes.
We've had a spicy lot here, yeah.
Let's just say that. We've went through some changes.
How long ago? How long?
We started in January 2013.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So we've had an inauguration in our 50 episodes. What's happened in the world? An inauguration of another.
President. We've had some great things come and go. Dennis Rodman visiting North Korea.
Yeah.
Kim Jong Un, who we loved to talk about, and has just disappeared.
Yeah. Ramis died.
Harold Ramis died.
Angelou died.
Yeah, Maya Angelou.
Senator Inouye died from Hawaii.
Yes, he did. Daniel Inouye. So, and we've been through many, many bits.
Yeah.
TNAC, who will be making an appearance shortly, I'm sure. many, many games that have swept the nation.
It was a big hit.
To include our newest one, if the poll is right, which is not your favorite because you got it handed to you the last time.
Yeah, all right. Can we just, okay. Josh, if you're listening,
Josh wanted me to tell you, you shouldn't feel bad because he has his ear to the streets.
Oh, I'm sure he does. Yes, he is. When I think of street cred, I think of Joshua Hupp.
We started out with who said that. Obama, which we haven't done for a long time. We've got to resurrect Know Your Obama.
For nothing else, the intro song is fantastic.
It is. So
we've gone through a lot of intro song bits, a lot of musical changes.
Lots of stuff. So it's our 50th episode. Super Bowl is changing their nomenclature to honor us, I believe.
Yeah, that's a big thing. That's you know.
But the most significant thing is our listenership has just grown by leaps and bounds, particularly in the last couple episodes. We want to thank everybody for the listen. Tell your friends, tell your lovers, whoever you're having an affair with, just have them listen because we appreciate that. And we remain free. Because as is our mantra, we've not really found a way to make
a buck off of it. That's right. So, two jerk-offs with internet connection. The minute we can monetize it.
Go over to, first of all, go to Unfiltered and Unfettered. We've got some new blog posts recently.
Yeah, you've been a little prolific here lately.
I've put some stuff out there. And of course, use your punch card because for every fifth blog post you read, you get a free episode of the podcast.
That's right.
So do that. And of course... Frank's Place, there's always new content coming out every week to include Fran, who is now engaging in crafts.
God help us all. I want
to see the volcano. When are you going to make the volcano?
I mean,
Fran?
You need to start thinking about that.
He's using
scissors without attacking anybody with him yet. We're not up to volcanoes. But I will say he's be prepared to, you know, he decided he would prefer to go by his formal name. Of Francis. He no longer wants to be called Frank.
That's beautiful.
He just turned 5, so I don't know if there's some kind of epiphany he's having. He's also sworn off of the free cookies at Kroger at the bakery.
No.
Refuse to take it, so I will no longer take cookies. He said it just like that. I said, really? You'll no longer take cookies? That's what you're saying? And I try to tell him they're free. We're not stealing them. I don't know what he thinks, but yeah, so be prepared. He's 5, and now he knows everything.
Yeah, who knows how the young ones get that stuff in their head. Jeez. So episode 50, we'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Again, grateful for every listen. So stay sharp, stay safe, and unfiltered and unfettered, we are out.
Thanks, Tony and Fran, for getting us unfiltered and unfettered.